Hello and welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show all about workers' rights and social justice issues. Stick Together is produced at 3CR Radio in Melbourne and broadcast to you around the country on Community Radio Network. I'm Denis Rogatyuk. On today's show, we will cover a range of topics and events that have been taking place in Victoria and around Australia in the past week. We will take a look at the latest developments among university and staff around Victoria in their battle against cuts to tertiary education. Joining us on the show will be Sarah Garnham, the Education Officer of the National Union of Students. We will also give you an update on a major industrial dispute between the warehouse workers at Super AMAT, represented by the National Union of Workers, and the company management that has locked them out. We will talk with Alicia Economidis from the NEW about the dispute's latest developments and the campaign strategies undertaken by the union. But first, we will address the elephant in the room that has been largely ignored by mainstream media throughout the week, the March in March. On last week's episode, we reported from the heart of the March in March in Melbourne, a mass Australia-wide protest that took place in multiple cities and attracted well over 100,000 participants, united in their dissatisfaction and disgust at the policies of Tony Abbott and the coalition government. Today, we will go behind the scenes of this new phenomenon and take a look at the origins of March in March, including the role that the social media has played in this conception. And now joining us from Newcastle is Tim Jones, a national organizer of the March in March. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, could you tell us, when was the idea of the March in March first conceived?
Well, what happened was that I'd just been on Twitter for two or three weeks and then having a bit of interesting times on there, and we saw that somebody had this March in March account, and he was quite vocal and saying things, you know, that it's time for people to know that they can protest and they should, and we should march on Canberra in March. And anyway, we followed him for a little while, and then it turned out that he put up a tweet saying, look, we can't carry on with this anymore because of personal circumstances. Is there anybody who can step up and help us to take over the account? And so anyway, Craig and I, and one other person, we sort of stepped in and we took it on, and we decided, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll organise a march against this new government in Canberra in March and pursue it as a campaign.
Right, so social media obviously played an enormous part in this, but surely to mobilise and organise something of this size would require more than just creating a Facebook event or a page. Now, what kind of steps did you go through to achieve this kind of popular mobilisation?
Twitter's a fantastic way of reaching a thinking Australians. You know, by combining Twitter and Twitter posts and in your Facebook page, we were able to get word up and around, so much so that it wasn't long before we had 20,000 subscribers to the Facebook page. And, you know, I have quite a few Facebook friends, and they're very interested in politics and discussing social issues. It's not all about cream buns and kittens. So it does sound unlikely, but yes, it cost us nothing. It cost us absolutely nothing up until the time we started organising the 33 marches to get this happening. And because there is such a huge groundswell of discontent and disaffected and completely insulted thinking Australians who are very happy to see something happen instead of the usual this sort of flaccid response that you get from the Australian public.
And we've also seen that the majority of corporate media and newspaper outlets have remained silent regarding the March in March protests. Now, do you see this as a deliberate move to silence the obviously widespread criticism of the Abbott government?
Well, I think that there's a couple of components there. Because we were sort of trapped on social media, then there is a certain element of surprise on their part, but then there's also a certain unwillingness to report. Which really did manifest in many ways. There was a memo that came through to the ABC programming departments to say that they should not promote any protests in the future, and that was only last Thursday week. And I put that through to Media Watch. It seems like there is a lot of pressure, and there's all the commercial networks, they're all about making money, and the best way to make money is to be friendly with people with money. And Rupert Murdoch not only has money, but he has an unscrupulous approach to disseminating news and manipulating human populations. It seems like a very strange pathology that I'm fighting against these people who just desperately need to destroy a healthy democracy so that they can somehow get ahead. But yes, as far as it goes, there's hardly a paper on our side. The Guardian, I think, is probably the pick of them. But we have got good press from the Guardian. We certainly shouldn't criticise it generally. What I say to people is, this is why we started March in March, so that people can actually bypass the mainstream media and get to hear what they need to hear. So, yes, and answer your question, almost absolutely.
And these popular mobilizations are reminiscent of the Your Rights at Work campaign that eventually contributed to the fall of the Howard government. So do you see the March in March mobilizations as something that could be sustained over the next few years?
Yes. Yes, I do really do, because that campaign involved a lot of union money, union organisation, professionals, people who do this for a living. I make no money out of this. I'm just a fitter, an underground fitter. I'm just a working class sort of guy. I've never protested in my life, and I can keep going at this forever. And I'm sure that now that we've actually, I think, really have put the cornerstone to a new and recognised demographic in Australia, which is the decent thinking citizens who are united towards the goal of maintaining a healthy and promising and hopeful social democracy. So I think we've won a lot of goodwill, and we've tried very hard to keep away from cliches. We've fought what the mainstream media have said, that we're all a bunch of ratbags and so on. And if you went to any of these marches, you would have seen some very civilised and some lovely people there of all ages. And I think that as far as things go, once we let people know that they're not alone, then we'll have them for life.
No, absolutely. I was at a march myself, actually. So,
and what did you think of it?
Oh, well, I thought it was fantastic. You know, I haven't seen a popular mobilization like this in Melbourne for years. Mm. And I guess the question now is, you know, where do we go next from this?
Well, you know, a lot of people have been criticised this because they say, oh, we've too spread out, we've got too many issues, and airy-fairy, and, you know, save the whales or kiss the trees. We're not that at all. What we are, as I say, a thinking citizen, has great many concerns, from humanitarian to environmental. And one thing that we want to do is give people hope for the future, you know, so that we don't dig up rocks from the ground and burn them in something, throw it into the air. We just build solar power stations. And then we build the things that help build solar power stations and give people jobs in a modern world. And one way, the only way we can do that is to change our political system. So, one person that I deeply admire is Ted Mack, a politician that was in North Sydney Council and then New South Wales Parliament and then in the National Parliament as a member for North Sydney. And he retired 2 days before he was due to get a massive increase in his pension on principle. And if you read his oration, the Henry Parkes oration he did in Tenderfield, and he just compares the Swiss system to the Australian system. And the Swiss system is a picture of stability and productivity, and he describes our political system as an elected dictatorship, so that it's just pointless to be in opposition because you're completely ignored. Look at the way Tony Abbott actually turns his back like a school bully on the opposition, treats them with no respect at all. And, you know, this is, excuse the word, but it's pretty scummy behaviour from a human being, let alone a Prime Minister. And so I would like to say to Australians that what we have, our political system at the moment, is designed for this chaos. And maybe it's time for a new federation, because the system's not working. It's producing some very, very ugly results.
Thank you very much for joining us on Stick Together today.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news. Broadcast around the country every week on the Community Radio Network.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio Network. Let us now turn our attention to the issue of tertiary education and the recent battles against job cuts and restructuring at the universities throughout the country. And now we have with us Sarah Garnham, the National Education Officer of the National Union of Students and a member of Socialist Alternative. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Now we understand that the fight back against the cuts to tertiary education has been taking place since Gillard government first unveiled its plans to cut $2.3 billion in overall funding to universities. With the Abbott government now in power, are we likely to see this attack on tertiary education intensify?
Yes, I believe so. The $2.3 billion in cuts that the Labor government originally slated, the Liberals have now taken those up and adopted those as policy. But as well as that, the Coalition have suggested that they want to look at things like privatising student HECS debt, as well as a whole range of other things, like looking at abolishing the funding to student unions at universities and also attacking public funding of education in general at every level, from primary schools through to universities. So I think we're likely to see further attacks on top of the $2.3 billion in funding cuts.
And one of the universities that has been affected the most by funding cuts is La Trobe. In particular, 350 job cuts were recently announced by the university administration, and the National Tertiary Education Union responded with a 48-hour strike. Now, what role did the students and the NUS plan for that action?
As you say, the one of the reasons that the La Trobe administration has given for those is the federal funding cuts, which is something that we've been campaigning against since last year. But this year we've started campaigning against it in terms of the Liberal government's plans to go ahead with these cuts. And we've been working with the NTU, the National Tertiary Education Union, in that campaign. So they support the National Day of Action that's been called by the National Union of Students, and essentially that's why the tertiary union at La Trobe University called their 48-hour strike to commence at 12 p.m. on Wednesday the 26th of March, and then the demonstration against the federal funding cuts will be at 2 p.m. in the city. So we are trying to tie those two things together, and we expect to see more cuts like this in the future as universities start to respond to the impact of the federal government's funding cuts. And in terms of the students working with the staff on the ground at La Trobe, I was out there for a student-run forum that happened last week, which staff also came along to, and the president of the NTU there addressed the forum. And that was about looking at the what's happening with these cuts, because it's not just 350 jobs being taken, but it's also that the university is planning to merge the five faculties they currently have into just two faculties, so completely minimising student opportunity and stuff like that. So the attack is happening across the board, and it's very much in students' interest to support staff in taking industrial action, because that is about that affects their quality of education, but also it's a basic principle for progressive unionists to get behind the staff when they're willing and prepared to fight against attacks like these. But yeah, I think that La Trobe is a real kind of trailblazer in terms of what's going to happen, unfortunately, as a result of these cuts. And there's already been similar things announced at other universities. Curtin University has just announced a huge restructuring program, which is, again, partially attributed to preparing for the impact of the federal government cuts. And they've announced 100 staff are going to be sacked over the next little period, and I think we'll see more and more of this happening.
And you have now been an education officer for the NUS for the past 2 months. In your opinion, how can we change the prevailing sense of political apathy on the university campuses and build a popular movement to combat the cuts to education?
Well, I think the main thing is that we need to convince students that it's in their interest to fight, and I think that that is about conveying what the impact of these cuts is going to be. So the fact that it is going to have an impact on people's subjects and courses, a lot of them will probably be obliterated in response to the funding cuts, but also things like the privatisation of HECS, which is something the government's proposed, will obviously have an impact because it will lead to fee increases down the road, I think so anyway. And so it's about talking to as many students as possible about the impact that these policies from the government and then also the policies from their own individual university administrations are going to have on them. And we found that's been the most successful strategy, tactic, in actually getting across to students the need to come out onto the streets. I think the other thing is that it is important that students who are already involved in campaigning against the government's attacks actually take a lead in calling demonstrations and so on. And, you know, some of those demonstrations might not be as big as others, but it helps to gather momentum around the campaign. So, for example, I mean, the March in March that happened just last weekend against Abbott, a lot of students came to that march, and it was a real example of the fact that people don't think that everything is all fine and dandy, and students are aware on a number of levels that their education is under threat, and that march provided a real opportunity to say to people, this is, it's important and useful to engage in activism on the streets against the government. But we can't just leave it at that. We have to keep providing those opportunities. So I see my role as providing those opportunities and making them as accessible as possible to students, and that's what the Wednesday demonstration is about.
Now, what are your thoughts on the possible size of the mobilizations, and can we hope to see a greater effort on the part of students and staff to defend the tertiary education system?
Yeah, I don't want to speculate too much about size. I think that we should get some respectable demonstrations across the country. I'm certainly hoping for that. And I think that as well as the people that come out on the streets this time, I think a lot of people have become aware of the campaign. So if anyone's listening to this and is hesitating about whether to come out, you definitely should. We do need as many people there as possible to put pressure on the government and to show that it's possible to actually build a fighting student campaign against the government. One thing I would say is that last year when we were campaigning against the cuts, we had some demonstrations at the beginning of the year before the cuts had been announced by the Labor government, and those demonstrations were marches through the city, which unfortunately had been something that the National Union of Students hadn't done for some years, but this time they did. And it was the fact that we had been protesting in the streets across Australia that meant that we had the best basis when the cuts were announced by the Labor government to be able to announce a snap demonstration. And then that demonstration saw over 3,000 people out on the streets. So part of Wednesday's action is laying the basis, getting as many people out on the streets as possible and sending a message that not only are we here to fight the cuts right now, but we're prone and ready to respond to any future attacks that the government comes up with.
Well, thank you very much for your contribution to the this morning, Sarah.
Thank you.
And I wish you best of luck.
Yeah, hope to see you there.
And for those who are listening, the National Day of Action will take place today in all state capitals across Australia. To find out more, visit the NDA's Facebook event page for your nearest city's action.
Stick together.
Yeah.
Stick together.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio.
For the last segment of our show, we will focus on the ongoing dispute involving the locked-out workforce of Super A-Mart at the Warehousing and Distribution Centre in Somerton. The Super A-Mart workers at the Somerton Distribution Centre have now been locked out for nearly 3 weeks, as management has been refusing to comply with the workers' demands to raise the wage rates to an industry average of $24 an hour, improved health and safety standards, monthly RDOs, as well as conversions to permanent work, among others. In response to the lockout, the warehousing workers, being members of the National Union of Workers, have initiated an indefinite strike and a 24-hour picket at the Super A-Mart warehousing complex in Somerton. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court of Victoria has injuncted the union members, as well as supporters, for any action that is deemed to prevent access to goods coming into the centre. Joining us now is Alicia Economides, the NUW organiser for the site and a leading figure in the dispute. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks for having me.
Alicia, there have been protests by the NUW regarding Super A-Mart at the University of Melbourne and WorkSafe Victoria. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, Super A-Mart is actually owned by a holding company, which is again owned by a private equity company called Quadrant. Now, they own a 60% share in Super A-Mart, and there are a lot of businesses that invest in Quadrant, and some of those businesses include WorkSafe and the University of Melbourne, as well as a few industry super funds. So what we've been trying to do is to put pressure on the private equity firm, and the reason we're doing that is so that those investors can put pressure on the private equity firm as well, so that they can either stop investing in Quadrant or force Quadrant to come to a reasonable decision and treat its workers fairly, because at the moment they're not doing that. And so these protests at places like WorkSafe and the University of Melbourne are aimed at getting those investors to commit to making that call to Quadrant and getting Quadrant to reach a decision and to reach a resolution with the NUW on this dispute.
And can you tell us about some of the latest developments about the negotiation between the workers and the management?
Sure. Since the workers have been locked out, this is the 17th day of the lockout, we've had two negotiation meetings with the company. We've pushed really hard for more than that, but for a while I think they were trying to deliberately just keep us out there really and just really try to demoralise the workers. And that's been a tactic of this company since day one. But yeah, I'm happy to say that the company finally, this time at this negotiation, had a decision maker in the room, which is something that the company hasn't previously done. And that shows that they're now ready to start taking us a bit more seriously. They know that the workers really care about this. But not only the workers care about this, but the community cares about this. And we're now starting to also get other workers from Super A-Mart across the country flooding in with questions and with similar stories. So word is spreading like wildfire, and it's really having an impact on the company.
How has the local community responded to the dispute? Have you seen much support for the striking workers?
Yeah, the community support has just been fantastic. It's really overwhelming. You know, it's a giant warehouse with some 35 to 40 workers, and I think they were quite sceptical on the community support they'd be getting in a little industrial back street in Somerton. But, you know, we had a community barbecue and there are about 80 to 100 people there. We had Celine Yap and Kate play as well, and it was just beautiful. People have been donating so much money, and even local customers of Super A-Mart stores have been sharing their support with the workers. I mean, you know, people care about this. This is their local community. This is big business, again, just taking more and more from the little guy, and people just aren't standing for it anymore. So the community's just been a huge network of support for the guys here. Not to mention that we had one of our delegates, Chad Wyatt, address a crowd of 30,000 people at the March in March last Sunday, and the support we got from that and just raising awareness about how even in our own backyard, these companies still treat workers in such terrible ways. I mean, just bringing that into people's minds has just made that support so much more real for everyone. And it's just been fantastic.
Thank you very much for joining us and contributing to the program today and updating us on the situation with the Somerton dispute, Alicia.
Thanks very much, Dennis.
And for those who are listening, the workers are maintaining an indefinite 24-hour picket at 86 Freight Drive in Somerton, so your help and support would be greatly appreciated by them and their families. Well, that would be all for Stick Together this week. I'm Denis Rogatyuk, and I'd like to thank all of my guests for appearing on the show today. Tim Jones, the March in March organizer, Sarah Garnham from the National Union of Students, and Alicia Economidis from the NUW. Thanks to the Community Broadcasting Federation for its financial support of the program. And of course, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for our musical hit of the week, Solidarity Forever by Jane Larkedal.
When the Union inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet that force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one. But the Union makes us strong. Solidarity forever.
told millions that they never toiled to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity.